Today, we are going to have Leviticus, of course. We're going to have the 11th and 12th chapter.
Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying to them, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, These are the animals which you may eat among the animals that are on the earth. Among the animals, whatever divides the hoof, having cloven hooves, and chewing the cud, that you may eat. Nevertheless, these you shall not eat, among those that chew the cud, or those that have cloven hooves. The camel, because it chews the cud, but does not have cloven hooves, is unclean to you. The rock hyrax, because it chews the cud, but does not have cloven hooves, is unclean to you. The hare, because it chews the cud, but does not have cloven hooves, is unclean to you. And the swine, though it divides the hoof, having cloven hooves, yet does not chew the cud, is unclean to you. Their flesh you shall not eat, and their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you. These you may eat of all that are in the water, whatever in the water has fins and scales, whether in the seas or in the rivers, that you may eat. But all in the seas or in the rivers that do not have fins and scales, all that move in the water, or any living thing which is in the water, they are an abomination to you. They shall be an abomination to you. You shall not eat their flesh, but you shall regard their carcasses as an abomination. Whatever in the water does not have fins or scales, that shall be an abomination to you. And these you shall regard as an abomination among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle, the vulture, the buzzard, the kite, and the falcon after its kind, every raven after its kind, the ostrich, the short-eared owl, the seagull, and the hawk after its kind, the little owl, the fisher owl, and the screech owl, the white owl, the jackdaw, and the carrion vulture, the stork, the heron after its kind, the hoopoe, and the bat. All flying insects that creep on all fours shall be an abomination to you. Yet these you may eat of every flying insect that creeps on all fours, those which have jointed legs above their feet with which to leap on the earth. These you may eat, the locust after its kind, the destroying locust after its kind, the cricket after its kind, and the grasshopper after its kind. But all other flying insects which have 4 feet shall be an abomination to you. By these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches the carcass of any of them shall be unclean until evening. Whoever carries part of the carcass of any of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. The carcass of any animal which divides the foot, but is not cloven-hoofed, or does not chew the cud, is unclean to you. Everyone who touches it shall be unclean. And whatever goes on its paws, among all kinds of animals that go on all fours, those are unclean to you. Whoever touches any such carcass shall be unclean until evening. Whoever carries any such carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. It is unclean to you. These also shall be unclean to you among the creeping things that creep on the earth, the mole, the mouse, and the large lizard after its kind, the gecko, the monitor lizard, the sand reptile, the sand lizard, and the chameleon. These are unclean to you among all that creep. Whoever touches them when they are dead shall be unclean until evening. Anything on which any of them falls when they are dead shall be unclean, whether it is any item of wood or clothing or skin or sack. Whatever the item it is in which any work is done, it must be put in water, and it shall be unclean until evening. Then it shall be clean. Any earthen vessel, into which any of them falls, you shall break, and whatever is in it shall be unclean. In such a vessel, any edible food upon which water falls becomes unclean, and any drink that may be drunk from it becomes unclean. And everything on which a part of any such carcass falls shall be unclean. Whether it is an oven or cooking stove, it shall be broken down, for they are unclean, and shall be unclean to you. Nevertheless, a spring or a cistern, in which there is plenty of water, shall be clean. But whatever touches any such carcass becomes unclean. And if a part of any such carcass falls on any planting seed, which is to be sown, it remains clean. But if water is put on the seed, and if a part of any such carcass falls on it, it becomes unclean to you. And if any animal which you may eat dies, he who touches its carcass shall be unclean until evening. He who eats of its carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. He also who carries its carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And every creeping thing that creeps on the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatever crawls on its belly, whatever goes on all fours, or whatever has many feet among all creeping things that creep on the earth, these you shall not eat, for they are an abomination. You shall not make for yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creeps, nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, lest you be defiled by them. For I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth. For I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. This is the law of the animals and the birds and every living creature that moves in the waters and of every creature that creeps on the earth, to distinguish between the unclean and the clean, and between the animal that may be eaten and the animal that may not be eaten. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, If a woman has conceived and born a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days, as in the days of her customary impurity. She shall be unclean. And on the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. She shall then continue in the blood of her purification 33 days. She shall not touch any hallowed thing, nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purification are fulfilled. But if she bears a female child, then she shall be unclean 2 weeks, as in her customary impurity, and she shall continue in the blood of her purification 66 days. When the days of her purification are fulfilled, whether for a son or a daughter, she shall bring to the priest a lamb of the first year as a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove as a sin offering to the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her, and she shall be clean from the flow of her blood. This is the law for her who has borne a male or a female. And if she is not able to bring a lamb, then she may bring 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, one as a burnt offering and the other as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for her, and she will be clean.
All right, just a few comments here before we begin. Unclean in Hebrew, what is the word for it? Tameh. Tameh means that which is unclean or something becomes unclean. For clean is Torah. Torah. That's the law. I just lost my mind there. And there's another word introduced here, and that is in verse 10. Tahor. Tahor is clean, yeah. Tahor to be clean. Now, another word is verse 10. And the word is abomination. Now, it's an interesting word. Because this, and we were looking at this so-called clean and unclean animals, there's certain ones that are downright abominable. What is that word? Sheretz. Sheretz means, it comes from a word, means filthy. It's filthy. And so we go through this thing and we see that certain things that he says, they shall be zeretz. Zeretz. They're filthy unto you. They shall be filthy. Zeretz unto you. And this is used quite often within the creeping animals and certain things of the sea. It's a little bit different. He's a little stronger in all that than he is on the other one. So it's kind of interesting how he is using these words. He's telling Moses, he's telling Aaron to teach these people what it's all about. Now, at the end of the chore, at the end of the chapter, there's a very interesting statement which we will talk about a little bit later, and has association with the 24th verse. He says, because I brought you up out of something. He brought you up out of the land of Egypt. That's a very interesting statement why he said this toward the very end of this particular thing. And the other comment in the 12th chapter, it's very fascinating. I don't, it's kind of unusual. We'll talk about that more in detail later. But in association with a woman when she has a son, her total complete days is 40 days. It was a son. But it's 76 days if it's a woman. Now, there's a clause in the problem with this one, because I have a little bit different one, because it depends on how you count the eighth day. We'll go back and talk about that a little bit later. But everything's doubled almost completely, except when it comes to the extra 68 days, which is really 10 weeks plus 6 days. In the relationship to the Shiva son, it's 5 weeks plus 5 days. So the 10 days got doubled, but then there's one extra one, a 6th day, for if it's a female. Well, I'll have you give comments about that when we get there. I find that very fascinating. By the way, every one of these things comes in, and it's called HaTorah. When he expresses these individual things, the clean and unclean meats, and all that which is abominable, all that which is called HaTorah. It is the Torah, the teachings, or it is the commandments of God, including the one of the woman's purification. It's HaTorah. Word HaTorah is used very, very frequently in the book of Leviticus. So it's very interesting to know that we think about the Torah, we sometimes don't associate it with, you know, this and that, but the book of Leviticus has that word in it more than any of the other books all combined together. All right, now for your comments, your thoughts.
Chapter 12. Verse 2 and verse 5. It says if she has a man-child that she's unclean 7 days according to the days of the separation for her infirmity.
Right.
So that's 7 days, 1 week. But if she bear a maid-child, she's to be unclean 2 weeks as in her separation. Why would he say as in and according to the days of her separation and use 7 days for one and 14 days for another?
Anybody has an input? Anybody has an idea?
Jeff?
It seems that it's referring to a type of separation as in the separation that a woman would have monthly. That seems to be not saying that there's a different time frame each month, but just saying that that separation time frame is just like separation for...
it's not exactly a period of time. It's a separation for this and separation for that.
Right.
That's what he's saying.
So it's a separation like the monthly separation. That's kind of what I get from it.
Okay, pure answer.
But I don't think that answers my question. Why would there be double amount for a male or
with female.
For a female than a male?
Does anybody have any idea? This is your time to say, the time to speak.
That's why they're called woolmen.
Well, for one thing, men does not have a cycle like a woman has.
Okay.
So,
why twice for females?
Maybe it was purification.
What is God really telling us? Why is it so, in one way, this is my thinking, I'm a male, right? More important and more valuable that she is to have 2 weeks when it's a girl. That's twice as long, twice as God. Remember, 7 days has to do with the completion of something. For her, it's double completion when she has a child, a female. Yes.
See, it comes from the woman.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Because with her being a female, that she would also, well, my thinking is, quite possibly that she's going to also be bearing children as well and will also be having her monthly periodic time as well.
Okay.
So maybe that's connected. I don't know. I'm more in question form.
Yeah. Yes.
The same thing for that issue, but I wanted to ask another question.
Oh, okay.
We were not ready. My question has to do with chapter 11, verse 36.
36.
Where it says, nevertheless, it has to do with something falling into a pit or a fountain that would have normally been considered unclean unto us. But then if it falls into a fountain, nevertheless, the fountain or pit wherein there is plenty of water shall be clean, but that which touches her carcass shall be unclean.
So what does that mean to you?
Well, I was wondering, this fountain has to be a running fountain? I mean, is there something...
Well, it says plenty of water.
Plenty of
okay.
water.
Mm-hmm. Like a stream or like a fountain or like a well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's touching the unclean animal is the issue. That's still this whole bargain. Let's say there was you see a dead animal along the river. Well, you pull the thing out. All right? Because you don't want to pollute the river. Unlike the Ganges. You don't want to pollute the river. Well, the river's still clean. But now you've pulled it out, you're unclean until a certain specific period of time. Yes.
As someone who grew up with cisterns on the farm, and the cistern was a huge tank down in the ground, and every now and then you had to go in there and go down in it and wash it and clean it out. And occasionally there would be an animal, who knows how, but would get through the top and end up in it. You had to go down, empty the cistern and clean it, and it was dirty until you scrubbed that thing down. However, if you have a cistern that is being fed by a pipe and has
constant flowing
water going out, then it doesn't remain unclean. You could take the dead thing out of it, let it run, and it would clean itself.
Right.
So it wouldn't remain unclean. That's what we did.
Okay, anybody else got any other questions within this two chapters?
Just a hypothesis. I'm probably completely wrong, but it doesn't matter. Having watched my wife go through the birthing process, both a male and a female child, I noted that early on in her pregnancy, with our son was far more difficult on her body versus our daughter was much easier on her body. Afterward, when both children were born, well, independently, obviously, they weren't twins. When he was born, her emotions and the hormones going through her body were intense and brief.
Okay, wait.
They were strong. They were very, very strong, but it lasted 3, 4, in some cases 6 weeks. It was done.
Okay.
Our daughter, on the other hand, they were more mellow. They weren't quite as intense, but they lasted many weeks longer. I think that there are additional hormones are involved when a woman has a female child versus a male. I'm not going to argue with twins. It's a different issue. But as far as I think there may be something else going on there than just a ritual purification.
Right. Okay. That's a good one. Ellie?
I agree. I think it's the hormones of the mother that has to take, that they're different when you're carrying a boy or a girl, just like the thyroxine inside you is bounced up during your pregnancy. You are having hormonal changes. It's different with a boy and a girl. And the restriction of restriction of cohabiting with the husband again during this period of time, if, because it takes longer for the female hormones to go back to normal after carrying a girl, I think it could very possibly be important not to conceive within the next 2 months after the birth, because it takes a couple of months, 2 to 3 months, before your milk supply is high enough to restrict ovulation. And I think the female hormones need to be all the way out of your system before you conceive, in case you conceive a son.
It's almost like, you know, I'm just thinking this, okay? You know, because the male has two. One's X and Y. The female has two. Same. Now, if twice as much is being drawn out of her when she has a daughter than a son, only half of it is drawn from her. A daughter, twice as much. And in Hebrew, it says, when it says her infirmities, her sickness, her weakness, she's weaker. And what Daniel was saying, I think that's probably very true. I mean, he's experienced it, and probably some of you women probably forgot what it was like to have a daughter compared to a son. I don't know. But it's something that I think, you know, this, I'm talking out loud here, that I think it really is because God had in mind the woman. She needs more time to regain her strength back. It is not that the baby girl is the problem. No, it's that the baby girl took more out of her. They had a scientific, I don't remember, many years ago, the scientific, they found out that they tested the woman's hormones before, and then they had the baby, boy. Then they tested her hormones, the girl. They tested her hormones before. They tested her hormones, and it was much less. She needed strength and rebuild and build her strength back up. As biblically speaking, it's called an illness or infirmity, a weakness, something that the woman goes through. How many men will never know this? I bet every woman here that once you've had that child, you are really strong, up on your feet, ready to run around the block, right? You're exhausted, you're bushed, and you just want to forget sleep. Let me just get out of this mess, right? Or let me just have a time of break, you know, from because it's a major, major trial or a tribulation or a labor, we would call it. That's my thinking. I may be wrong on that. But does that kind of help a little bit? We have not come to a complete answer yet. We ask God for the answers. But we're looking at the physical things here right now, right? The physical part. Any more questions? Okay. one thing I see a pattern here. And when we get... Oh, Daniel.
Oh, totally unrelated topic. I like this topic because I know you and I have had this discussion in the past, and so has Mother, Mom, and I. That as far as the birds
yeah.
that you may or may not eat, it's always been... This conversation comes up periodically every few years. Well, as far as what you can and cannot eat, note that chicken, of course, not mentioned in the Torah anywhere, whether you can eat that or not. Nor is a turkey mentioned that you can eat that. Quail, however, are. And the debate has been, okay, just because quail's mentioned, does that mean turkey and chicken are inclusive in the quail? The reason I ask that is because mankind, scientists, which we all sometimes question, dictated that a quail is in the same bird family as a chicken and a turkey. God didn't necessarily place that family. Mankind defined it. The same thing, of course, applies to the duck, a goose, and a swan. Mankind defined them as the same family. God didn't. So it makes you curious. If these are birds are unclean, and one of them says a sea bird, though it's the Hebrew word actually implies just a waterfowl of some form, are duck, are geese, are swans edible?
Okay. Another one that's also water one, which we don't think of the water one, is a stork. And it's a water bird. Okay. What Daniel is saying, and which I don't have a disagree with him whatsoever, okay, but it's something you yourself have to kind of ask the question. Okay. It doesn't name everything, but names species. And so that's what you have to kind of look at. I'm not going to tell you yes or no to the answer. You're going to have to find that on yourself and your own conscience. Don't do something that you feel is contrary, and don't do something because, am I doing something wrong? Look into it. Examine it yourself. You must do this. Okay? Now, very interesting about all this, they are called what? Unclean? What are they called? Abominable. Well, that's a different word, isn't it? Filthy. Okay? So you ask yourself some question. What is it that he is really saying to us? Yes, Ellie.
Okay. Are you talking about the fact that all that is in the season, verse 10, all the season rivers that don't have fins and scales and all that move in the water and living things, you're not talking about that being the birds?
We're talking about the birds.
Okay. Okay.
Not that which is in the water yet.
Yeah, that duck thing's been around for a while.
Right, I understand that.
It's a big discussion.
See, once, you know...
The stork? The ostrich, the short-eared owl, the seagull, and the hawk after its kind. Aren't all of these... carnivorous or what? No, what do they carry on? Yeah, they eat dead things, scavengers. Where?
I don't think it matters what they eat.
Well, isn't that kind of in common?
Right.
Here?
However, you look at a chicken; it'll eat anything, including itself. They'll devour a dead animal.
Yeah.
So that's not a rule.
Yeah.
Okay. We will get to this a little bit later, but I just want you to pair the pattern here that God has in mind. What is the pattern He has in mind? Are these all these birds that have just been called an abomination? Were they really created by the Creator of heaven and earth to be an abomination? Wait. What makes them an abomination?
Eating.
What?
God defined them that.
All right. Now stop and think for just a little bit. Quote, before the fall of man, end of quote, all these clean and unclean and abominable, what were they called before that?
Good.
Good. Holy. Blessed. All right? So we are now asking this, the physical thing about these animals, and birds and fish, what is it supposed to tell us?
Keep the earth clean. They're like the garbage cans of the ocean.
Well, we can do that way. I understand that statement. But, you know, birds, like, they eat worms, too. It's a very worms not supposed to eat, but they'll eat worms. They'll eat spiders. Bill?
Wouldn't it be just because the Father said so and obeying Him?
I'm sorry, what?
Just because He said it's, we're not supposed to, and we're supposed to obey Him.
Yeah, and there's a reason for it. I mean, the Apostle Paul made a very obvious statement in the book of Romans. It's an old English word, that which is common. The old English word for common meant that which is unclean. 1611. But he said, he is persuaded that nothing is unclean are common by itself. How did it become that way? Is a dog really an abomination? Or what is it God is telling us? What is a picture of these animals all about?
Don't eat your pets.
Daniel.
To me, when I look at the point which Adam and Eve were in the garden before they had done anything wrong, that I pretty commonly believe that no animal was dead yet.
Correct.
They didn't eat animals. No animal ate other animals. It was all, you know, vegetable type diets. To me, when they did something which, of course, resulted in death being introduced, at that moment in time, all animals then were classified by what they do. Just like all men were, was classified what they do.
Correct.
And that when the New Testament discusses you are not unclean or nothing unclean by itself, it's because by itself it isn't. What it does makes it clean or unclean.
Okay.
So when God separated these animals out that we have listed here as well as ourselves and various other things, what is and isn't clean, it's what it does that defines it, not what it is.
Right. So when we look at the birds that are mentioned here, what do they do that are called an abomination? What is it? What is their actions? What do they do? When you think of an owl, how what do you think of an owl? An owl is a species here. Now, there's a lot, it's not just an owl you're thinking about. That's a common word here, by the way, in Hebrew. I mean, in English, yes.
To answer your question, at least my take on it, I'm probably wrong, but it's okay. Most of you probably have answers that are probably wrong, better than this. But they're defined, or what they do is they can think.
They think. Okay.
They think very detailed and can plan out their futures.
Okay. Now, what about the creepy crawly things and the bully and, the spiders and, the turtles and all that kind of stuff? You know, are they really creepy crawly things brilliant?
God didn't give them a big enough crazy thing. But if they were large enough, they would think too.
What? Have you ever seen a spider crash?
What does a spider do? Why a spider make a spider web for? What's the characteristic of a spider? Makes something alive dead. It kills things. An owl kills a what? A mole? It kills a rat. It just consumes it. What does a buzzard do? He waits until it's dead and because he don't eat it. No, those are the characteristics of the bird. Right? Now, let me ask you a question. We know that in Isaiah, excuse me, I didn't look it up, that talks about when the kingdom of God is on this earth, that these certain animals, their nature changes. The nature of the other animal doesn't change. A lamb still acts like an lamb, okay? But a lion changes its character. A dog changes its character. A snake changes its character. Okay? Now, as you think, let's get through physical. Do you believe that will physically will take place? Do you believe it will physically actually take place? Okay. Next question. How many times in the Word of God, from the mouth of the Creator Himself, does He liken people unto an animal? You're either going to be what? There's a sheep and a goat and there's, okay, what else? A dog. And there's a swine. And he's careful about these things. And a snake. All right? Now, when we look at this thing, why is it that God wants to see and understand the characteristic of these animals? Is it so that we would not eat them? Or is it for us to understand in our present time now, in our 21st century? Yeah. I could give myself a kill on that. You stop and think about this for just a second. God is telling us, okay, if you are going to throw your pearls to swine, what's the characteristic of a swine? It's a physical animal. It tells you what it's going to do. It's going to go right after you. We're not talking about the pig you have. We're talking a real pig, a wild boar. I mean, they are downright vicious animals. He wasn't talking about, you know, the tame little bill, the thing that's a smart one, right? No, he's talking about the wild one. He's talking about a dog. He's not talking about your pet that you have, you got trained. He's talking about the wild dog. They didn't have a bunch of pets in those days. You know what the most average person probably did in their life? They might have had a horse or a donkey or a mule, not mule, sorry, but it had something for labor for him to do some work. But the average person didn't own the pets we do. How many, this is my personal opinion. I want you to think about it. How many have owned a rabbit as a pet? How many people owned a hamster as a pet? They may own a lot now, but wait a minute. They were unclean to them. Don't touch them. Leave them alone. You know, and we know today the reason why hamsters die so quickly in captivity, because they're not wild. They're susceptible to diseases. And even our dogs, our pet dogs, guess what they're susceptible to? The very same diseases you get. They get cancer. They get arthritis. They get bone marrow loss. Everything you do. Go, well, I've got to eat what you eat. But you understand what I'm saying. Now, the object here is that God says, I lifted you up out of something. What did He lift them out of? He lifted them out of the land of Egypt. Now, we look back physically. Okay, now He says, I brought you up out of. Well, He actually did. You know, there's a climbing up a high mountain here. Anyway. And so, here now, did God elevate to a holy status the Egyptians? But He did raise to a holy status the Israelites. Weren't they holy? Is that the reason why He raised them up to be holy? Because they already were holy? No. He's changing the characteristic of the house of Israel. So what you might see here, this is my input to you. I just want you to think about this, because when the fiery darts of the I can't remember which apostle was said, the devil is like a roaring lion. Oh, that's interesting. You know that the Messiah is also called a roaring lion? Which one is which? So we have to ask ourselves some questions. We also know the Messiah is also called a lamb. He's also called a lion. All right, so we have to look at the characteristic, not what Daniel was talking about here, is a characteristic of the animals. They were changed for a reason and for a purpose. And it says here, for you to be able to discern what is holy and what is not holy. Who is He talking to here, by the way?
Israel.
No. He's talking to Moses and Aaron. Now, the book of Leviticus is a very priestly book. When you think you are going to be kings of priests or priestly kings, the book of Leviticus is telling the function of your role. It's a physical thing teaching, and so you see the physical things. And we get into chapter 13, 14, and 15, which I hope to be able to run them all next week. They're very long, two of them are very long chapters. But there's a point after point after point after point. He's got a pattern, a pattern, pattern, pattern for the priesthood, the function of the priesthood, what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to determine what animal is clean, what animal is not clean. What is holy, what is not holy. When do you take something that is unclean and make it clean? How do you something that is unclean, how can you make it clean? We have a high priest. And that high priest made an awful lot of things that were very unclean holy. Did he not? Did his death only save those who were holy? He said, I didn't come for those who are well. The physician doesn't go to the person who is well. The physician goes to the person who is sick. And so I look at these things and I say, what is it that the book of Leviticus is trying to show us? And Apostle Paul, Peter rather, was really hit with a 2x4, wasn't he? You remember what it was? All those unclean things. Right? Now, we say, well, no, the book of Leviticus here, the 11th chapter, has nothing to do with human beings whatsoever. However, the book of Acts uses those abominable things, those unclean things, and present them to Peter. 3 times. What is it that Peter had to understand and learn? All them goyims out there are unclean, abominable, unholy. And then he said, do not call that which I have cleaned unclean. So when you look at these things, physically, yes, a physical thing tells you something. The characteristic of the animal or the insect or the thing at the bottom of the ocean that takes anything out of the sun, he says it's an abomination to you. It's filthy. Right? And yet that filthy stuff was presented to the Apostle Peter. And he says, rising. No. You mean you disobeyed the Lord, the creator of heaven and earth? Yeah, he did. Second time. How many times do you have to say no to God? Peter did it 3 times. What was he testing Peter out for? Whether he'd obey? Well, did Peter obey? Well, no, he disobeyed. He didn't need it. But what did Peter obey? The law. And he said, now, I have taken that which is unholy, that which is filthy, that which is an abomination, that which is unclean, and I am making them holy. And he registered, oh, he is dealing with more than the house of Israel from this point on. Do you understand what I'm saying? I see a parallel here. I don't know if it's true. I just see a parallel here of the characteristic of these animals for a reason. Now, God said, I raised you up. I lifted you up. I raised you up out of sin and transgression of the unclean people of Israel. Of course, we haven't gotten here today. So I want to make you holy. He's still trying to make them holy, right? He hasn't reached that point yet. You know, he has to be you holy because I'm holy. I'm not there yet. Yes.
It appears to me that as far as discussing this particular chapter, as well as what you point out, the book of Acts and such, is that when we observe an animal or a series of animals or species that are unclean, that are defined by God that these are not good for you, it's supposed to give us a contrast. So if you pointed out, if I look at the dog, or the wolf, more accurately, versus a sheep,
right,
was a contrast of actions. If God raised me up out of Egypt, his purpose for me to see is that, all right, don't be like the Egyptians or don't be like the wolf.
Simple as that.
Don't be like the lamb. You are now, or sorry, by the
lamb. Be like the lamb, yeah.
The lamb.
Don't be a creepy crawling thing.
So when he's discussing to Peter and shows, look, these things which were once unclean are now clean, he's pointing out these individuals, though where their background once was, they have, by their actions, are seeing around them, all right, I see my neighbor is unclean on both sides, I choose to be clean. So these, though they were Gentiles,
right,
are choosing by observation and belief that they are now going to say, I'm going to change my background, I'm going to change who I am, change my characteristics, to define myself as being clean.
Am I doing that?
So that's just how I think that's kind of general idea what you're saying. I think I'm right.
We're searching for a purpose here. He said that law is spiritual. So I'm looking at this Torah of the clean, unclean animals, and it has to be reached beyond the physical ground level. The ground level is to teach us something. And he said, I want your thoughts to be high. And I think if you look at Peter, he had to change his thinking from an earthly process of thinking, because God really is not against the animals. Bill.
So what do I tell someone when they offer me to have a hog?
What did Peter do? He didn't need it. He didn't need it.
But if they say, why, what do I,
right,
what do I
now,
say?
Now, the Torah, we're not there yet. The section of the Torah that says, well, I think it was read here. Even if you eat something that's common or died of itself, did not know it, or you knew it to make a difference, you're unclean until evening. Now, it comes to eating something that's unclean, the Torah later on says, if you didn't know it, because you could be fooled. I mean, there's all sorts of artifacts. Remember that old commercial television about some kind of butter? It says, you can't fool Mother Nature. And this ridiculous thing come on. I says, oh, it's the easiest thing in the world to fool people. People lie to people all the time. And you look at the person and says, boy, he really eat it. He thinks he's eating something good, but he's not. And they don't care. I have been fooled many times in my life. I will continue on being fooled many times in my life. But I have a creator of heaven and earth that says, okay, because there's the unknown things I don't know that I've done. There's one time we ate, not knowingly, we ate, what was it, shark or something like that? I don't know what it was. We didn't know what it was. We started eating it. Something doesn't taste right here, you know. It's already down your belly and your stomach. We stopped eating the whole thing. Hey, something's not right with this thing. Hey, guess what? You know, we were fooled. We were unaware. But we didn't walk away feeling, oh, God, you have cursed us. No. Yes. I'm sorry, what? Yeah. Well, we knew that then, but
I think the answer for you, Bill, is how much trouble you want to get into. Because you can say, you know what? I can't handle that. It undoes my body. Or you can do what the Jews say and say, alas, my father forbids it. Either way, they're going to look at you. The alas, my father forbids it is enough to say, what? Which I think is cool, but if you want to be very pleasant, I can't eat it. My stomach tears my stomach up, which is true.
Yeah. We will get into next week the latter part of the 12th chapter, because I'm running out of time, and I want to try my very best to stop right at 2:45, and right now it's 2:45. Jeff.
Or Bill, you could start a topic of discussion as to why things that in and of themselves are no different from each other, but one is a good path to go down and the other is not. Most of the world sees the things of God as of no importance and no different from anything else. Yet it might be a point of discussion to start into why it is important to be careful of the paths that you go down, even if at the beginning it appears that there's no difference between the two routes. Could be a starting discussion.
Next week we're going to go in to, because the 13th, 14th, and 15th chapter also talk about the very same subject matter. But I'm going to read what it says here. After the woman's done her purification is done, this is the 6th verse of chapter 12, the days of her purification are finished. Whether a son or a daughter, she shall bring to the priest a lamb of the first year for a chola, and the second and a young pigeon or a turtle dove as a chatah at the door of the tabernacles. and he shall offer it before Yahuwah and make an atonement for her, that she will be tahor. She'll be tahor from the flow of her blood. And this is hatorah for her who has born a male or female. We'll get more into detail about that next week. I'm trying to use these words and get used to those words, because one thing I had found when I actually substitute the Hebrew word for what those offerings are, it spells something out different. It tells me something different. It stands out from all the other words. So we're just almost all my comment to you. We'll go into more detail of this, not too much detail, but just a briefness about it. To know that, remember, we already learned that when you have a whole offering, there's certain process by which it's be done. The rest of the book, 13th, 14th, 15th chapter, does not go into the detail how it's done, because already was taught. And the chata offering, that's a sin offering, is certain things that must be done in certain process and certain ways. And the minhah, although it's not mentioned here sometimes, it is always to be there. We're only introducing here, we would talk about the next three chapters, is, yeah, this, you do this, you do this, you do this, but there is a procedure which we already had gone through that you just don't hurry up. This is not a process that's quick and fast. You know, when you were a priest, you really had to work for a living. You really had to work for a living. You weren't out there getting a free lunch because you're a good speaker. Oh, no, you had to work for a living. We'll get into that in more detail in the next 2 weeks.